They're more than a band. They're in an institution. They are the Scatolites, and that's ska reggae high bop. It's from the Scatolites' 1994 album, High Bop Ska. Lester Sterling on alto sax, Zem Odoo on tenor, Andre Murchison on trombone, Travis Antoine on trumpet, Val Douglas on bass guitar, Natty Frenchie on guitar, Ken Stewart on keyboards, and Trevor Sparrow Thompson on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today, election 2016. Ahead of the primary, all presidential candidates are in a New York frame of mind. Going into the high-stakes, delegate-rich April 19th New York primary, presidential hopefuls are leaving nothing to chance. They're all over the Empire State, working their circuits and trolling for votes. A hurriedly arranged CNN so-called debate, you know, we don't call them debates on this program, we call them anything but, it's a Q&A session between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, sponsored by CNN, tonight in Brooklyn, is trumping, pardon that pun, all other events that Democratic candidates have scheduled. And on the Republican side, Donald Trump is making the most of his hometown brand. A lot of folks are identifying as New Yorkers today, at least three of them, Trump, Bernie Sanders, who was born in Brooklyn, and Hillary Clinton, who became a New Yorker 8 years ago, qualifying for the gift of a U.S. Senate seat. So today we'll talk about the importance of the New York primary, especially for those of us who reject duopoly politics. What does this all mean for that group to which we ostensibly belong? Well, a couple of things about the New York primary. Of course, it would help greatly on all sides to clinch New York State. New York State has a lot to offer a prospective presidential candidate. On the Republican side, we have three people in the race, and really, I don't think there's an argument here about how well the non-New Yorkers will do. Ted Cruz and John Kasich. So it isn't going to be too much of a challenge, I think, for Donald Trump, except you never know. In the Republican camp, we have a movement of sorts afoot to try and beef up the moderate sector of the Republican Party. As the party establishment begins to coalesce around Ted Cruz and Kasich, the idea is to squeeze Trump out. But Trump, as you know, has been making big noises about what he calls the rigged system, the corrupt system of the delegate allotment process, in which he says that despite the fact that he's leading in the popular vote by the millions of votes, he is nonetheless behind, much farther than he should be, on the delegate count. And there is room, I think, to pursue this argument, because I think it's a legitimate question. And we've talked about that here, about the constitutionality of the voting process as it applies to both these parties. And it has to do with the integrity of the vote. If there is a system within the party structure of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party that can, in fact, negate or nullify or overturn the popular vote, I think it ought to be looked at from a constitutional point of view. It seems to me, I'm not a legal expert, but it seems to me to simply set these arguments and concerns aside under the aegis that, well, the party can make up its own rules. And these are party rules. The party made up its rules, and all of the candidates contesting in this presidential cycle know the rules, and too bad if they don't like them. I think that has to be balanced against the popular notion of what voting is and the value and currency of the vote, which for many people in the United States has been hard won. The idea that people might, if the parties are making up their own rules and have made up their own rules, which again will change come convention time, they will make up, in fact, they have a rules committee that will make new rules in the convention, the Republican convention in Cleveland, Ohio, and the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. They'll make up new rules all over again. So we can expect the rules issue to be a continuing problem. But that aside, I think there is a legitimate argument here to say when people are voting, they are not casting a vote conscious of the fact that the votes are not permanent and that there is, in fact, a structure within the party to negate the vote. And another level being that the votes, therefore, of these delegates, since it is the delegates in both parties that who elect the eventual nominee, the argument would be that each delegate vote, therefore, is representative of several thousands of people's votes. So it negates that whole idea of one person, one vote. Again, to firm up the point that when people are voting, they think that each individual vote is counting, but in fact, the people's vote, the popular vote, is not the vote that elects the nominee. It is the vote that, in fact, elects the delegate who participates in electing the nominee. And in the case of the Democratic Party, it goes one step further into insanity because we now have another group, a hyper group, a hyper delegate called the superdelegate. And the superdelegates are entrenched party officials who actually have free rein. They're not bound by the votes of the people either. They can vote for whomever they wish. And of course, it is highly likely that they will be voting for the party's preferences. So this is a huge problem. I don't think it is enough simply to say, well, the parties are making up their rules. If the parties, from my perspective, if this is a total party issue, let the party spend the money, all of the money that needs to be spent, because the taxpayers are, in fact, subsidizing party business. That's one of the issues for me. If it is all party business, then hire your own police, you know, the people's taxpayer money, you know, is paying for all of these things, security services and so forth. The party should be footing the bill all the way through. And the party should not be the beneficiary. No parties, therefore, should be the beneficiaries of tax levied services. None. If you're having your own thing and you're running your own voting process and you are permitted because of political accommodation to do so, and of course, the other objection being this applies strictly to the two parties. The other parties are not getting the same treatment at all. The other parties are being blocked in different ways from participating in the democratic process. So I think there is a legitimate point here. So Donald Trump is on home turf. His family comes out of Queens. His grandfather and his real estate business actually started in Queens. And he's been very, very much identified with New York City. And it happens that he is at this moment, from all possible ways of looking at it, he is a front runner in terms of the contest among Republicans for the nomination. So New York is going to be a very, very hard place for the other two candidates, John Kasich and Ted Cruz, to beat the hometown guy. But we'll see how that goes. But again, tonight in Brooklyn, in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, we have two people who now have decided to play their New York card. One was born in New York City, in Brooklyn, that's Sanders, and the other became a New Yorker in order to qualify for the U.S. Senate seat. This used to be called carpetbagging, but of course it applies to Hillary Clinton, so it's something else. She currently lives in the very tony, and one would say a restrictive covenant almost, because no regular folk live in Chappaqua. So that's where she is. And so the contest is focusing on the big debate tonight. Okay, well, all that is great. This is all Dog and Pony Show, because we are talking here about the duopoly, and the Republican and Democratic parties have so much more in common than they have as differences between them. So we'll see how that goes. We'll watch it, and we'll see how it goes, because it's worth watching. It's worth noting for a lot of reasons, which we will discuss today. But what does this mean? What is has come to this point, and we keep revisiting the question, how does this process, this entire process, how does it factor into the political life of people who prefer something else other than the Democratic Party and the Republican Party? A different process, a different party, a different approach. Because I think there's strong ground here to argue that neither party right now is serving really the needs of the people. And both parties have had a long history of maintaining that stance, irrespective of who eventually ends up in the White House. We know that it is likely to be either a Republican or a Democrat, and that's been the choice so far. But in this political season, we should have come to other realizations by now, and we should be acting or beginning to act on our on these revelations that should inform our political choices. What do we do? Do we accept this? Do we go along with it? Do we continually choose between the lesser of two evils and the evil of two lessers? Is this our choice? Is this to be eternally our choice? I'm making a case here that as we observe the process unfold, we see not only a need for something different, an immediate need for something different, but we see also an opportunity, because in fact both parties are in crisis. They have tapped out, they have plateaued, and they did that a long time ago. And they haven't really been able to articulate a vision for all Americans, because neither party has been about being for all Americans. It just is not what has worked in politics. Politics has become so stratified, so segmented, that although people talk about the American people, whatever that phrase means, the nature of politics today, and this is the result of essentially the industry that has developed around it, you have all kinds of things related strictly to politics and getting elected. You have all these consulting firms and PR firms and polling firms. programs and news organizations. You have a lot of people with a lot of interests, advertising agencies, lobbyists, all these different people who really weren't so much involved in directing the political drama. They are now absolutely at the epicenter of it, and they create it. So politics has gone from a process of determining a political future for the nation, if it ever was that. I'm speaking now in the ideal sense and the conceptual sense, not in the practical sense or the real sense, but at least as defined. This process is supposed to be about choosing the leader of the nation. And we have been accustomed to believe that that this is a democratic, small d, a democratic process here. We all participate in it. But we can't go beyond this point, it seems to me, the point of proof that it isn't about the people. It is about the ability of various interests flexing their muscles in order to capture a strategic prize. And the prize is that office, the highest office in the nation, and all of the goodies that go along with it. And we have that shift, an absolute shift, no question about it. It's about money and power. And that office allows access to money and power, not only on a national level, but a global level. This is very heady stuff. And so are the egos attracted to it. Political organizations still are conducting business, especially those outside of the duopoly, are conducting business in the same old way, or conducting no business at all, or are completely ineffective and making themselves irrelevant. By that I mean they keep doing the same thing, expecting entirely different results. That's insane. The moment we're in should be a form of instruction to movements or people who aspire to really get movements going. It should inspire a plethora of movements, because so much of the need, the real needs of people, so much of it is being ignored or not at all intended by the candidates to accommodate. They talk all that stuff because the people from whom they expect support monetarily and voting wise, you know, they give them that kind of lip service. But the truth is, the vast majority of Americans will not be addressed in this election cycle, or perhaps any in the near future, because we live in such a segmented society. It is hard, literally difficult, to put together programs that affect all people. We have never been such a democratic society. We never had an across-the-board sense of fairness that everybody deserves a shot. That has never been the case. So on the face of it, the whole premise that we are presented with by most candidates is just false. It's just flawed. And it becomes that every 4 years they tell us the same lie. Oh, well, we've got to make America great again. Well, you know, let's take that phrase. You've got to make America great again. We know what you're talking about. We know you're not talking to all of America. America has not been great for everybody. And the statistics keep telling you this. The facts and figures keep telling you this in every single category. You see differentiation that would shock any logical mind. You do have lines of separation. You do have the people on the top and the vast majority of the people on the bottom. You do have a racially segregated society still. You still do. So when you try just to tell people in a turn of phrase that, you know, we have to make America great again or some such other silly idea, we know that we should know, those of us who are outside of that, we should know immediately. You can't possibly be genuine talking these things. But this is a time to see how, at the same time that the system is acknowledging how far short it is falling with regard to real human needs, it nonetheless is engaging in a campaign of deception to tell us we are so much better off. We're so much better off. And if you vote for candidate A or for candidate B, it could be even better. What are we going to do with this information that we are getting in this political season, where we're seeing the absolute truth, the incontrovertible truth, that the parties, the Republican and Democratic parties, have few, if any, real solutions to the real problems that people are confronting every day. They have few, if any, real solutions about promoting justice and freedom. Not just in the United States, within the borders of the U.S., but around the world. In fact, they're proving more and more how alike they are and how intent they are on first maintaining loyalty to the same destructive system. And I'll throw the words around from time to time about reforms. We have to reform things. Why would you want to reform the Chicago Police Department, which yesterday, got a 100-point plan to reform the police department? You see how silly it is. You don't reform something that is irretrievably bad. You get rid of it, and you do something else. And then there are people who would be happy to hear that. Oh, we are reforming, reforming the police department, which by their own statistics has been shown to be unreformable. It's a wash. But people are buying into this idea. You know, it's a really fascinating thing. So even we hearing this word from Bernie Sanders, we're going to reform this. Are we going to reform that? No. The demand now is to absolutely and utterly destroy those things that have, over a long period of time, proven to be genocidal in their impact. You don't reform these things. You destroy them. You get rid of them. And the people who propagated them, you get rid of them. You fire them all. You conduct a cleaning of the house. And you come up with something else. You put something else into play. So, let me come back to the theme of our issue today. This is an opportunity that has been teaching us things. And the question I put to you today is, what things has it been teaching you? What have you been seeing? And what do you think? What use are you making of what it is we have been learning? This is the question. And so, I think We have a caller, Joel, who tells us regularly, as you can't deny the sanity of his suggestion, movements are what are absolutely necessary at this time. We're long overdue mass movements. But in order to have a movement, you have to have organization and mobilization. Not enough of it is happening. Perhaps things will reach the point where there will be no choice. People will have to, for their own, if only for their own selfish interests, they will have to organize. They will have to mobilize. The system is fully entrenched. And no matter where the candidates are, where they place themselves on the political spectrum, it is loyalty to the system first that we are hearing from both sides. They are first dedicated to the system. And maybe they'll entertain some vague ideas later. But they absolutely recognize that their first task is to maintain the system. So we'll take this break, and when we come back, your thoughts at 888-874-4888. We'll address this question in the moment that we're in, and we can use the New York primary as a backdrop, because it does illustrate so many points that I've made today, and it's a good jumping-off point to enlarge our discussion. What should be learned from this process so far, especially for those of us, and I imagine that that's a pretty large chunk, for those of us who see really no difference at all, or very little difference, if any, between Republicans and the Democrats. So we'll take this break, come back to your talks and your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about the moment we're in as New York is about to enter its much vaunted primary, both Republicans and Democrats. And by the way, that's the only people who can vote, Republicans and Democrats. It's a closed primary. Again, it's party business. Your calls at 888-874-4888. Kwame from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, Sister Patrice, how are you, Patrice? How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts?
I think it's very shameful for a country that espouses to other countries and people around the world democracy and fairness and equality and with the we're the height of civilization to confine people to a two-party construct. I think it's ridiculous. It just shows you the ongoing hypocrisy of America. Why should anybody have to be confined to just two parties in this primary?
Well, clearly, because you cite that, you obviously are suggesting there ought to be more parties. But let's get to that point. What should be occurring here, and do you see any hope that this point is sinking in, that people are getting the point that, you know, this two-party thing has run its course?
Right. I think there should be some definitely mass protest against this whole two-party duopoly. There should be, you know, the people need to be, you know, we all need to be educated more about what actually is taking place, what time we're living in. But definitely mass mobilization. The whole thing has to be brought down. So, there can't be no compromises and all that. It has to be taken down.
Well, you got us started today, and I thank you for that, Kwame. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Sister Freedom Land.
Thank you. We go to North Carolina. Stanley, you're on the air.
All bloated. Everybody, every progressive must think about Clinton and that war. How about Wilding? Wilding war.
Oh, I'm not understanding that. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts about the moment we're in?
Well, basically, you asked the question when I first heard your opening monologue. What are you learning from this moment, which could be a very good moment to usurp both of these parties? And what I am learning, well, two things. Number one, just a reaffirming of what I've always believed as far as since I've been a person dealing with politics and the social movements, that this government is full of mess. You know, I mean, it's a dog and pony show. It's every 4 years people gin up and get all excited and speak in these platitudes and diatribes. But the work needs to be done. And that brings me to my second thing that I have observed, the lack of political knowledge. There really needs to be a push to educate people as to what politics are. Politics aren't therapy. I don't care if Hillary comes and eats fried chicken, or if Bernie comes to my church and talks to me and tells me how good I am, and it's not a feel good exercise. Politics is a business, okay? And I'm not for this system, but it's the only thing we got in town. And unless you approach it as a business, or you know, not as some type of cathartic feel good thing, which I understand as far as African Americans are concerned, for a long time in this country didn't care about us. This country still doesn't care about us to a great extent, but it feels good when somebody acknowledges you on a human level. But hey, get rid of all of the politics of personality. We got to get down to business. Power can seize nothing without a demand, and we need to put ourselves in a position where we can form coalitions to make demands on this system as long as we're going to be in it. And that's what people don't understand. People, even December 12th, for example, I went to a meeting at Columbia Law School with December 12th, we're talking about presenting some type of affront to what's going on. And out of all of the panel speakers, only one, a man named Jazz Hayden, who I admire, talked about taking over your local government, taking control of the local, on a local level, and making an impact there and expanding from that. I mean, the main thing they wanted to do was write in reparations instead of voting for anybody, which is a gesture, but it's not going to amount to anything. I mean, let's take this moment now to build. Let's take this moment now to start something that's going to be a relevant force in the next 10, 20 years, not just talk and make all these grand gestures of or politics or therapy or feel good. I mean, I'll feel good when I see something happening that's going to benefit me and my people, not because Hillary Clinton came down and ate a piece of chicken and told me I was a good guy.
So how do we get this started, you think? What has to happen in order for people to get started on building things, building true grassroots movements?
Well, what I am doing as far as my lane, I try to educate people. I work with some individuals who have internet. We use the internet access, like yourself on PRN. We hold forums. We try to do things like that. The part that we really need, that I feel we really need to get out, is education. People to understand what politics are about in America, and what what you have to do to gain some type of political power in this system. That's what we need to concentrate on. And that seminars, speaking, you remember Maury Marksman? I used to have those seminars when I was very young then, but I used to go to them. How he would speak on the condition of African Americans, on our connection. The other brother, I can't recall his name, but even Gil Noble. We need more programs, more outlets like that to educate people, because I'm gonna tell you, a lot of people don't understand politics. They don't know what it's about. They don't know how to look at a person's record. They don't know what real political power is, and they look at it as an exercise in feeling good. And every 4 years, you come out and you vote. Voting is a part, and it's a very small part of the whole political process. And unless you involve yourself in that process on a local level specifically and on a national level, even on a global level, once you get past the local level, you're not going to have any impact, and you're always going to be frustrated because this system doesn't care about you. This system doesn't care. You've got to make these politicians afraid. Once they're afraid, they'll do what they want. They'll do what you want them to do. As long as they don't fear you, they don't respect you, they're going to run over you.
Well, thank you, Ed. The greatest point that you've made here today is about the idea that people have to start local. They got to start, focus local, and get some education about this process and begin the process of organizing. Thank you so much for contributing today.
Thank you.
Thanks. New Jersey, Pam, you're on the air.
Hi, Jill. How are you, Street?
Hello, Pam.
I'm getting ahead
How
of
are
myself.
You?
Jill Stein is running for president on the Green Party. And she's anti-war, anti-nuclear, anti-GMO. She's for helping poor people, which all I hear about is the middle class, you know, help the middle class. What about the rest of the world?
And, I appreciate that. I appreciate your support for Jill Stein.
And also, Sunday, April 17th, this weekend, she's going to be at the Green Party convention at Rutgers University at the Student Center Lounge at Douglas College from 9 to 5. She'll be on in the afternoon. It's at 100 George Street, New Brunswick, New Jersey. And
Pam,
I'll be getting a...
Hi, Pam. I'm trying to get you to address the question. I appreciate your support for Jill Stein. What does the moment teach us, those of us who clearly recognize the severe limitations of a two-party system and the likelihood that neither party actually will be our salvation? We can't place our trust in either of these parties. But what do you see as the moment that the moment offers for something different, and what would that something different be?
Well, for me, the moment offers change from leaving the Democrat and Republicans that are warmongers, that don't care about the earth or the people. They just care about themselves and money and power, and they love killing people in other countries to get money with the military and rebuilding after they bomb their countries apart. And the moment teaches me we have to work for a change, and I'm going there this Sunday and getting the petition form to get petitions for Jill to be on the ballot in New Jersey. She's on the ballot in 20 states. We got to get her on the ballot in all the states. So that's a start. She's a good genius, not an evil genius. She's a doctor. She's a very smart woman, like you are. And
But you're saying, Pam, that you have already begun, in your view, you have already begun the move away from the two-party system, and you seeing that it makes sense to support somebody else outside of that system, and that is the Green Party and Jill Stein.
Yes, that's what I choose now, the Green Party. It's not that I'm for any party. We should love everyone, no matter what party, race, religion, culture. But I believe in what she believes in, anti-war, anti-nuclear power, anti-bombing people up with nukes, anti-GMO that kills and causes cancer. That's what I'm for. I'm really not for any party. I'm just for the good of the earth and humanity and all humanity, not just God bless America. How about God bless the world?
Well, thank you for contributing today, Pam. I appreciate it. From Brooklyn, Willie, what have you to say?
Sister, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay, my dear.
What does the moment mean to you? It's this moment that we're in.
It's teaching me something that I have already known. That this system has nothing to do with us. Simple as that. It has nothing to do with us. It has always been there to undermine and crush us. So it has nothing to do with us. The question now becomes, what are we going to do? You see, in what you're doing now with PRN, we have a place in this. Now, if we, for the next election, we could build our own grassroots movement. That's what I think we should do. And we have things put in place by Gary. If we were supporting the station, and let's say we send $5 a month for political action committee. You know, $5 a month with 25 million people, that's $100 million. You know what I'm saying? So we'll have the money to run a campaign. Not that we're going to need the media, because if the people are listening to PRN, we do their work as far as educating other people. You see, 25 million people, for me, it's not good. In the United States, we have roughly 300 million people. A good start would having 200 million people listening to PRN. Then we could say we're doing some serious work, you know, and forget about these these two parties. They have nothing to do with us. They come around when it's time for every 4 years, and they make all kinds of problems. I'm voting for none of those people, none of them, you know, and they tell us, oh, we're weak for this, we're for that. Once they get in office, it's a very different story. And this is a game that they've played over and over and over and over again. This has nothing to do with black people, Bernie Sanders, none of the people. They have nothing to do with us. They're just paying lip service to us. It's as simple as that. Build PRN, and, you know, I know Gary don't want to run, but we have Wolf, which is Wolf. We have many good people at PRN that we'll have the money, and we could send them put them up on the ballot to address our issues. It's as simple as that. Forget about these people. It's a waste of time, as far as I'm concerned. You know?
Okay.
It's a waste of time. What we should be focusing on is getting at least 200 million people listening to PRN inside of America. Because whatever happens here, it reverberates around the world. You see, so the changes start with us. Now, you guys are doing a perfect job. Because I was telling a friend of mine the other day that, you know, every time these people sit in front of that mic, they're putting their lives on the line for us. What are we doing? Our job is to make this thing the voice of America. That's all.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that support. And I appreciate your suggestion, because what you are also saying is that any independent movement, any movement away from a system, ought to have its own method, its own communication system, because
that's
it is an integral part of educating everybody a place where ideas can be exchanged, and we don't have that. We really do not have widespread communication systems available to us.
We do have that. We have PRN.
I understand.
You know what I'm saying? We have something. sometimes I say that man I love him so much, the vision and the work that he does. You know, I'm saying, what all we have to do is, how can I help? I found my place. I've got so many little circles going around that they listen at 12 a day. That's all I ask you to do. 12 to 2 o'clock. That's all. And give me some money. Okay.
And give me some money. Thank you, Willie.
You like it? Give me some money.
Thank you so much.
Love you.
Thanks so much for your call. Okay. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, this is David from Brooklyn.
Yes. How are you?
Oh, well, thank you. David, playing the game from Brooklyn, and I hope you have had a chance to read the book by now.
I have begun it.
Yes, very good. You know, as I listen to all this discussion here, it brings to my mind one thing. This cannot be reformed. You can't have corporate capitalism with the oligarchs atop and have democracy. It's impossible. It's impossible. The people have to rise up. I mean, there's no way that you can reform any of this. This is not working. Corporate capitalism, from its beginning, when they started the slave system in the 17th century, in Virginia and places like that, decided at sometime around the rebellions that happened there, was to institute a system of white supremacy racism, and they did it. It has not changed one bit since that time. It has just evolved into different things during the course of history. You know, before 1865, chattel slavery, after 1865, various things like Jim Crow and convict lease, and up until this very day, the goal is still the same, maintain profit for those who rule. That is the chief number one thing that the oligarchs who run the country want, and the tactic or the instrument or the weapon that is being used is white supremacy, and it just evolves from one thing to another from the beginning to it is now. So there's no future in terms of capitalism and democracy, especially in this country. It might work in maybe a Scandinavian country where you have a more homogeneous population. It's not going to work here. So people have to get it that those in charge are not interested in them, freedom and liberty and justice. So that can't exist. This is about those at top making all they can and everybody else scrambling. And, you know, people have to get it. So it has to get to a point where people rise up and, you know, revolt and do things and organize, because you can't keep the same system in effect. This is a ridiculous thing that people are going around calling themselves participating democracy and saying that they are really doing something when it's not set up that way. This is a very bad situation. You can't expect those who are in charge of all the levers of power, the schools and the media and all the things that give people information, to tell the people what's really going on. Why should they do that? It's not in their favor. So, you know, we need to do something different. You can't keep doing the same thing all the time, like every 4 years voting in the same system and expect something to change. It's not going to change. There's no reason that those at the top want things to change, because they're doing what they need to do, which is to make profit, and that's their number one concern.
Okay, I buy your argument. However, the question is, what is to be done in the meantime? These movements, and you yourself said it, it will take some time to build. What happens, what can be done now, if anything?
What can be done now, we start locally. And maybe things like, for example, you mentioned these primaries. What a ridiculous thing that we, the taxpayers, are paying for these job primaries when they don't count for anything. We may need some legislation to decide what you said, and I agree with you, for them, the parties, to pay for them those things themselves rather than the people paying for it. You know, step by step, we need to take over. We may start at dog catching, taking that over, and then move on up to various things. All these little jive congressmen and little jive turkey councilmen and whatnot, we ought to start at that level, expose those people for who they are, and start taking over at the local level. That's what I suggest.
What's the mechanism? What's going to bring people together to see that they have much in common in fighting against a common enemy?
Well, it's communication. In other words, we have to get out what the facts are and be able to do it. You know, with the great work that you and Gary are doing and whatnot, we've got to expand on that. Because people just don't know. They don't know these things. They don't understand the nature of the system. And the system is, in effect, that has the goal of maintaining political power, economic power, and social power. And they're doing that. So we have to understand that we got to communicate with people so they get some realization of what is really going on. It's very sad to see how the system, in effect, the oligarchs that run it, are able to manipulate people so easily. So I go around all the time, I talk to people, and people say to me, David, you don't mince words. Well, I don't mince words. And, you know, people are shocked because they're not used to hearing anyone talk like me. I mean, people are just dumbed down. It's so sad to see. But I don't give up. I just keep going. The point is, it's not easy when people are trained so that they function against their own interests. We function against our own interests, and we don't understand the nature of the worldwide system that we're in. We have no understanding of what's going on around us. And you, for example, you know, I live in a black community, and there's certain things you can't do. You can't make any critical analysis of what President Obama is doing. People, they don't look at or listen to what you say. They say, oh, you don't like Obama. No, it's not any question about not liking Obama, but you're not even allowed to make an analysis of what's going on. It's very sad. We're in a terrible state because the ruling class, the small number at the top, are able to manipulate people so. And it's a very, very sad situation.
Well, thank you very much for your contribution today. Thanks so much, David, for your call.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. That brings us to the end of our program today. And as we see this presidential primary cycle coming closer and closer to an end, and then the next leg, of course, the conventions in June, and that will produce a so-called nominee, and then, you know, on to the general election. But the important thing is to observe the process and to be very much aware of how this process does not apply to many of us. There's nothing there for us. It offers us nothing, really, substantive, or something relevant to our needs and to our interests. I used to be known for saying we have to be ruthless and obsessive about our interests. And as a class of people, we have fallen down on the job with that. We have decided to just yield to a system that has no interest. David just said it so well. It will not change, except perhaps to get even worse. This is a time to observe how limited, intentionally limited, this process is. It really isn't designed for everybody at all. It is clear that the vision first is to maintain the system, which, as you know, and we discuss all the time, it's not working. It's not working. It is working for those people who are wired in, the very, very wealthy, who have now, as of this cycle, they have absolutely entrenched themselves. The money part and the wealth is one thing. They now demand utter control. They used to be able to be content with the idea, well, you know, they could pick up the phone and get things done. Now they're saying, look, I know better than everybody else how to get things done, and I'm going to run the show. And we're seeing all kinds of examples of that. The political process devolving into a kind of personal property for the wealthy. And the only reason they want it is because they now will have something that they never had before, and that is access to nuclear weapons, to an army, an air force, a navy. In other words, a means of dominating the whole world. This is very heady stuff, very strange psychological undergirding here in this election. But I'll watch this so-called debate tonight. It will be the subject of our discussion here. If you have a chance, you know, as much as you could stomach it, just watch it and see. And you will see all the evidence you would need for what's wrong with the system. So when we gather again, we have something to talk about. Tomorrow, of course, you know, is Free Your Mind Friday. You want to get your brains in gear for that. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at Lead Stories, LEID, stories, plural, at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.